Brian Lehrer on WNYC. So one of the biggest consumer complaints these days seems to be about mobile phones. They're too expensive. You're locked into a plan, often for 2 years, so you can't switch providers when the service is bad. And why does it always seem so much better in Europe? Well, change might be coming to U.S. cell phone networks from a company usually associated with something else altogether. Google is trying to bid for a new piece of cell phone bandwidth opening up, and they want to change the whole business in the process, or at least that's what they say. What seems like an arcane procedure for the Federal Communications Commission could change the nature of how we talk to each other. In fact, the story made the front page. It's the lead story in today's Washington Post. So joining me now to look at this is Siva Vaidyanathan. He's professor of media and law at the University of Virginia and author of the forthcoming book, The Googleization of Everything. We'll ask him if we're about to see the Googleization of our cell phone service. Siva, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks, Brian. It's good to be back on, although I already miss New York. I moved 3 days ago but yeah, it's good to be here on the radio anyway.
So you got it. Now, you were at NYU and used to come into our studio to talk about things like this, and you got an offer you couldn't refuse from Charlottesville?
Yeah, the University of Virginia is doing really amazing things in media studies, and one of the things that they're very interested in is media policy. So conveniently, that's what I'm back on your show talking about.
Well, it's a beautiful campus and a beautiful climate, and I hope you enjoy it down there. But, of course, you have to spend all your vacation weeks in New York.
I'll do what I can.
So what does Google want to do with cell phones that we can't already do?
Well, what's interesting here is that Google sees a pretty strong trend, and a lot of people have spotted this, that we are moving a lot of what we have done on our personal computers into these small devices that sit in our pockets. We used to call them phones, right? But now we're talking about using those devices more and more for our music and video, for our email, for our instant messaging. As these applications and habits move into these smaller boxes, we're losing a lot. We're losing that malleability, adaptability, flexibility that we've enjoyed in our personal computers. And the reason that the personal computer has been such an amazing platform for innovation and creativity is that it's largely open. A lot of different companies can produce applications for it. The standards are pretty open. You can, you know, you don't have to have advanced training to plug a product into it and start selling it. So that's a very different thing with your mobile device. Your mobile device is locked down to a service provider. The service provider dictates what applications you can use. I mean, my BlackBerry won't even let me use its Bluetooth power to connect my PC to the internet, which it certainly could theoretically, but BlackBerry's decided it won't let me do that.
So, because BlackBerry decided. And of course, one major downside of the iPhone that's come out since its release is that you can only use one network, AT&T, otherwise no iPhone.
Exactly. I mean, in some ways you could think, you know, think how many more iPhones would have been sold if you didn't have to switch service carriers, if you didn't have to deal with AT&T's relatively slow internet service.
Not to mention it's the service that Consumer Reports rates as the worst out of the big four. Funny that Apple, I don't want to get bogged down in this, but it's still kind of funny to me that Apple, as forward-looking as it usually is, made the deal with that provider.
Yeah, I sort of suspect that, you know, one of the things Apple feared is not being able to actually satisfy demand for the number of devices, and this was a good way to modify that. But, you know, basically, Apple didn't have much of a choice. These carriers generally demand exclusivity for the top-end products. So there are, you know, the BlackBerry curve, the most interesting new BlackBerry, is only available on certain carriers as well. So, you know, at the high end, anytime you're dropping $400 to $600 on a device, you're basically committing yourself to at least 2 years of service, regardless of how bad that is. And we all know that we would love to have our choice of services. We would love to be able to have a wider choice of devices. We would like our devices to work better. None of that can happen. Nothing is going to work as well as your personal computer as long as we suffer from this tyranny of contracts and technology that the wireless companies, the telecoms, have imposed on us with the aid of the FCC. So what
okay.
Google's doing here is trying to open up the rules, like basically make the wireless world operate under the same rules as the internet has for the last 10 years. A spirit of openness and adaptability and creativity and innovation. Increased competition, lower cost. Google will benefit from this directly because more people will be able to use Gmail on their phones rather than whatever specific mail service the provider contracts with. People will be able to use Google in a more smooth fashion to do web searches and enjoy the internet at large, not just the truncated, boiled-down internet that so many phones provide.
Right. So how would you be billed in this model? How would you pay for your cell phone calls?
Well, you would still subscribe to a service, and it might be and you would still pay by the month, right?
Uh-huh.
But you would be able to, under these rules that Google is pushing the FCC to adopt, you would be able to change month to month if you decided that, that one particular company is not treating you well. You could just move over to the next one. If Sprint's treating you badly, you move over to AT&T. If AT&T is treating you badly, you move over to T-Mobile. And more importantly, every time you do this, you don't have to sacrifice the $400 to $600 device you just bought.
Right.
The current system's not so bad if you're relying on the, you know, the essentially free Nokia phone that you get with so many of these services, and you're just doing SMS and voice. But for anybody who wants a more advanced experience, a more complicated experience on their device, and that's increasingly business people and teenagers.
Yeah, right.
you know, and especially people in major...
Now, there's a political coalition, huh? Business people and teenagers.
Yeah, right, exactly. Now, I mean, I think just about every consumer would benefit if Google wins this battle. The FCC is open to new ideas right now. Kevin Martin, the chairman of the FCC, has spent a lot of time talking to the Google guys about this in a very academic fashion. And Google operates, you know, at the, in the realm of ideas more than political power. And he's come along. Excuse me.
That's right.
Kind of cold. He's come a long way toward Google's position, but he's not completely convinced that Google's position of radical openness, making your cell phone work as well as your personal computer, is really the way to go yet.
They have different pollen in Charlottesville, so
you're
going to get sick all fall. My guest is Siva Vaidyanathan, professor of media and law, now at the University of Virginia. He has been at NYU for a number of years and a regular guest on the show to talk about media policy, especially new media policy. He's the author of a forthcoming book called The Googleization of Everything, and we're talking about Google applying to the FCC for a new model of cell phone service. Obviously, the other phone companies like AT&T and Verizon don't like this. They've complained that Google is trying to unfairly force its business model on to other companies. Why should the other companies have to operate the way Google wants them to? Why should the government force them to, which is, I guess, what this is really about?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, the government's supposed to work for us. Now, of course, we know better than that. We know we're not so naive as to think that the FCC actually works for the American people. But these companies spend billions of dollars every year on twisting arms in Washington. And they're very successful. They've been doing it for decades. The net neutrality battle, which you and I have talked about before on this show,
right,
the network neutrality battle basically lines up the same way. Google and eBay and Amazon and other web-based companies who have benefited from the openness and dynamism of the web have been battling to make sure that the telecom companies, which govern the last mile of transmission to your house, don't get to pick and choose winners, don't get to extort money from certain companies to make sure that their data flows better to you. And that battle is being reflected in Congress and the FCC, and this battle is a subset of that. Because now Google's on the on the offensive. Instead of just saying, we need to preserve network neutrality for the standard internet that we know and love and have for 10 years, Google's now pushing forward saying, let's, instead of making the standard internet more like your cell phone service, which is exactly what AT&T and Verizon want to do,
mm-hmm.
Google saying, let's make your cell phone service more like the internet.
What would the implications of the other be, by the way, for people who haven't heard much about the net neutrality debate? If the web became more like our cell phone service, what would that mean on a practical basis for our use of the web?
Oh, well, prices would go up, services would go down. There'd be less competition to be able to create and adapt new new applications, new programs for your computer. You would also have a situation where certain websites would work better than others. So, for instance, if you happen to subscribe to Time Warner Cable for your internet service, amazingly, you're likely to find that CNN's website, a Time Warner company, sends video to you much faster than Fox, or sends video to you much faster than YouTube. What would happen without net neutrality is that the internet service provider could dial down service for certain sites, dial up service for other sites, and make those determinations based on their short-term financial interest, basically whoever writes the extortion check. So a company like Google, which is invested in pretty heavy video delivery service right now through YouTube, which it owns, the last thing it wants to have to do is pay this extortion price to the internet service provider.
Right, so there are big debates going on in Washington, too, which a lot of people don't know about yet, over this issue of net neutrality, whether Congress will pass some kind of law guaranteeing net neutrality or whether they will let the market go in the direction that you just described. And part of the interesting politics of this, to me, is that the telecom companies have traditionally had tremendous lobbying power with Congress, while Google had stuck to its core business. But Google seems to have learned the ways of Washington by recently pouring millions into its own lobbying efforts and inviting FCC officials to its headquarters. So how do Google's neophyte political efforts stack up against the big old telcos now?
Well, you know, Google does things its own way. It's a company unlike any other. So even its lobbying efforts are new and different. Google is very well plugged into public interest groups. And they've managed to let public interest groups be front and center in a lot of these battles without necessarily funding them, but certainly encouraging them and pumping information to them. In addition, Google's very well plugged into, you know, policy wonks and intellectuals. And so a lot of the people who think a lot about these issues tend to think a lot like Google people, because Google hires people straight out of PhD programs and law schools, who are sort of on the cutting edge of this stuff. So I think about people like Tim Wu at Columbia University, a brilliant law professor up there, who has written a paper. It was published earlier this year that basically outlines this exact policy proposal to open up wireless networks to allow competition and lower prices and better service. And this happened just months before Google itself took on this initiative. So that's the sort of permeable membrane that's going on in Google's lobbying efforts.
And funny enough, the Washington Post today, I mentioned they have this as their lead story this morning, mentioned that what Google calls its googly approach to politics by seeking the business of political campaign managers and starting its own public policy blog.
Right.
So are we seeing the Googleization of politics as well as the attempted Googleization of cell phones?
I think we're definitely seeing an attempt at it. Whether it succeeds or not is another question. You know, Google has really mastered how the universe of the web works and has a sense of how people who live on the web think and operate and want to, you know, a brilliant adaptation. Washington's a different universe, and Washington is very 19th century. And we'll see how well this new political activism and lobbying effort works in a place like Washington. But in the meantime, you know, the odds are still stacked against Google in just about every legal and political battle. Remember about 10 years ago when Microsoft was caught in the same situation. It had found itself on the bad end of the Justice Department under the Clinton administration. It found that it had not done a good enough job lobbying either the administration or Congress to maintain its interests in Washington, because all that time Microsoft had been operating, thinking it operated under a different set of rules, thinking that it operated as a global company over and above the U.S. government, that its relationship with consumers was strong, and that there was very little that Washington could do to mess with it. Well, of course, it found out the hard way by getting convicted of a crime, essentially, and then turned around and became extremely politically active under the current administration. And lo and behold, the current administration's Justice Department basically, you know, zeroed out its penalties and let it go away with a slap on the wrist. So,
and Joel Klein became the New York City schools chancellor.
Exactly right.
After being the lead prosecutor against Microsoft in the Clinton administration.
And Google, I mean, Microsoft went from a company with almost no history of political donations to one that's very active with both parties now.
So we're almost out of time, but when you think about Google, well, it was once a search engine. Now they own the biggest video site, YouTube, a news service, and now they're trying to get into cell phones. You're writing a book about the Googleization of everything. Are they overreaching by trying to enter all these disparate businesses? Do they see something common to them all?
Yeah, I think they see something common to them all, which is the manipulation of information in general. Like, Google would love to be the filter, the place that you have to go before launching yourself into an information search. And it is for the web right now, especially for text, right? And increasingly for video and images. But what it would like to do is live in other parts of your life. Live in your pocket if the device you use in your pocket is your chief source for information gathering. It would love to be the way that you use email. Their interest in that is data mining all of your habits as a consumer and making dossiers that can help target ads in very inexpensive and precise ways to your interests. That's a revolution in advertising. It's a revolution in information seeking. And it's done right now, at least so benignly and relatively inexpensively for the consumer, that we think we're getting this tremendous level of service for free at all levels.
We have
the real question is, what exactly are we giving up?
Yeah, we're out of time, but we have a comment on our webpage that says, Google now implants a tracker on all your web browsing activities. I don't trust how big Google's hand has gotten into your privacy online, and I think they are the real big brother. And then you talked about data mining. Well, our last segment was about the Bush administration data mining as part of its surveillance program. So eventually, things are getting bigger and bigger and more intrusive. And Sidya Vaidyanathan, now at UVA, thanks a lot for coming on with us.
Anytime, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.